first up today, Sergeant Stubby, the stray stump-tailed terrier mutt that became the mascot of the 102nd Infantry Regiment Division in World War I. He became something else, too, a badly needed companion to men living and fighting in horrific conditions. Stubby became the best-known dog in the war and the first dog who could actually salute. Our guest is author Ann Bossom, who's written a new book on all this, Sergeant Stubby, How a Stray Dog and His Best Friend Helped Win World War I and Stole the Heart of a Nation. She's written 9 National Geographic books for young readers. And Ann Bossom, welcome to Up to Date. So nice to have you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, you spend any time with this book and you wonder why the military doesn't make dogs a permanent part of warfare. Why aren't they?
Well, I think today they much more are than they were, certainly in World War I, where they played no official role with the United States military. But today you do see dogs providing all sorts of support to the troops and doing very dangerous missions themselves.
Even on the battlefield itself.
Well, surveying for mines and so forth, for
mm-hmm.
example.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's taken a while. But over time, we've come to realize that these dogs can be very helpful in the battlefield. I think perhaps still there's a bit of a gap in appreciating just how important the companionship is of an animal like this.
Well, this story begins when Stubby, you know, one day just wanders out onto an Army training field at Yale University. Where had he come from and what do you know about that?
We know very little about where he came from. He was from the New Haven area, we presume. And someone somewhere along the way must have cared for the dog at least a little bit because someone had removed his tail,
yes.
which is where his name comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But he had long since lost track of that owner, or maybe all those army rations that were being prepared in the camps were too tempting, and so he found a better home.
Well, why was cutting off Stubby's tail a loving thing to do for him?
Yeah, it doesn't sound very nice.
Not really.
No.
When they cut off my tail, I was not happy.
We don't favor that. It's a method that's been used more in the past than currently, but it is still followed to make a dog look like the desired appearance of a breed. And at that time, breeders in the United States were developing what became known as the Boston Terrier. And it had a variety of names early on back during Stubby's era. The American Bull Terrier was one of the names. And having a short tail was part of the look. And Stubby has a lot of the characteristics of this Bull Terrier or Boston Terrier breed, and especially in the early days. And so I think the tail was meant to make the dog look that much more appropriate, which would have been seen as maybe not a nice thing to do, but a wise thing to do.
Well, how did Stubby Ann get together with Private James Robert Conroy, and how did they manage to become best friends?
So Conroy was also a native of Connecticut and had enlisted in the U.S. Army very early on after we joined the fight in 1917, declared war, and said we would pick up with the Allies who had been fighting since 1914. And so he was sent to this New Haven training camp. And very early on, as Stubby was making his rounds, the two of them seemed to have just found the chemistry that made them best friends. And so much so that even before they had it became time to ship out, we have a surviving photo that shows the two of them together.
Hmm. How did the other men respond to Stubby?
Stubby seems to have been universally loved by everyone.
This
there
is
very
not a controversial character in American
no,
history,
this is,
right?
This was just a darn good dog. And everybody seemed to love him. There doesn't seem to have been much hesitation when it came time to break camp that Stubby was part of the unit and should come along, whether it was official or not.
I was going to say, how did commanders take to this idea that Stubby was actually going overseas with Private Conroy?
Well, I don't think commanders were necessarily in on that part.
There's a little secret here, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. but soldiers have a way of pulling off pranks and other mischief. And so with some sleight of hand and other tricks, they managed to get Stubby onto the troop train that headed towards the harbor in Virginia, Newport News. And then ultimately arranged for a crew member on their transport ship. This is, of course, when you had to take a ship to get to Europe, and arranged for a crew member to smuggle the dog on board. And apparently they succeeded without anybody figuring that out. And it was some time before a commanding officer encountered the dog.
Was there any consideration given to Private Conroy, you know, separating from Stubby and leaving Stubby behind?
We have a very thin historical record about these early days with mm-hmm. the dog, but I came across nothing that would suggest that, I think he kind of left it up to Stubby, but you can imagine maybe how that was a wink and a nod. Oh, well, he's still following me just like he does every day. So mm-hmm. we'll figure out how to continue to take care of him.
How did the commander feel about Stubby once he was discovered on the boat?
Well, this was not seen as a good move, and there's this wonderful story that's been handed down that has a ring of truth to it, which is that the dog was a very clever dog. Now, everyone agrees with that, and had made a very thorough study of the military and understood bugle calls, knew the basic commands of parade formation. Hmm. And probably with Conroy's help, someone at least had taught the dog what you did when a commanding officer enters the room. And that's if you're Stubby, at least you sit down, raise up on your rear legs, and then lift your right paw up to your eye and stare at the guy and wait for him to return your salute. And supposedly this is what he did when confronted with the commanding officer, who said, well, what the heck, take him with you. He's off to the front.
I was going to say, with a dog doing that, who could possibly say no, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, Stubby developed these incredibly valuable abilities and capacities on the battlefield, like alerting soldiers to impending gas attacks. How were those abilities discovered, and do you have any idea how Stubby managed to develop them?
Well, what we hear anecdotally about dogs who are in military situations is that they're very clever about these things, and they have all these instincts and abilities that they bring to the scene that eclipse human abilities. So in terms of sound, sense of smell, and so forth. And it doesn't take them long to piece together cause and effect. And when these gas canisters began to explode near the troops, the dog was able to connect together some cues. And my best guess would be a combination of sense of smell and sound, and would know that something bad was going to happen and we better tell our friends. And so he would bark and alert the soldiers that it was time to put on a gas mask.
In fact, he even had his own gas mask.
That's right. He had become pretty valuable. Got to protect this guy.
There's a story about Stubby capturing a German spy. What happened there?
Well, and I, you know, as someone who's written about history, and I approached this whole topic with a lot of skepticism, but I came to believe that this was a true story. There were numerous accounts of it that I encountered in the historical record, and they varied somewhat, but the basic premise seems to be that in the fall of 1918, so this is in the final months of fighting, the mm-hmm. crescendo is building. Stubby and the Yankee division were on the move, and Stubby had, among his various duties, did some guard duty and had, using all those doggy senses, quite a good idea of what a German was, and that was a bad thing to have a German around. And so he was out on one of his little reconnoiter personal missions and encountered someone who may have just plain been lost, and that's quite possible because so much turmoil was going on. Or maybe he was a spy and was checking to see where the Allied troops were moving. In any case, the dog knew he was not supposed to be there and began barking, which alerted the troops that something was up, the American troops. And this lone individual seems to have tried to parlay with the dog, and his German doggy chat didn't sit well with Stubby. And when the man realized that he wasn't going to get anywhere talking to Stubby, he turned and ran. And Stubby's was a very good dog and ran after him. And although he was not a large dog, he was powerful and he was able to knock the man down. And the story goes that he grabbed the man by the seat of the trousers, which presumably I think would include a piece of the man. And resulted in the German equivalent of I give up. And so then, because he had done that early barking, eventually some Americans find him, trace him down, and there he is with this German soldier. He's officially captured his own enemy troop.
Well, what else could Stubby do on the battlefield, Anne?
Well, he.
I mean, you already covered a lot. I mean, for
yeah,
sure.
we've covered a lot. I think. It just daily, his presence was perhaps one of the most important roles he played, just as a companion and a friend. He kept people company during guard duty. He adapted as the fighting adapted when they moved out of the trenches and began this open warfare, trying to rout the Germans and then push the Germans back. And so there were these campaigns across the battlefields. Stubby was on the move with the troops and played the role of a rescue dog, which was an official task that dogs, particularly for the European services, had been trained to do and would help find the wounded. And Stubby knew how to differentiate between a wounded American or another allied, like the French, and a German, and would lead the medics to the Americans. And dogs have a better sense of if someone who is his unconscious or still is still alive, and could find people who were out of sight. The wheat was tall in that summer of 1918, and so people could get lost easily and be hard to spot. But Stubby was able to find them, and you know, he was a guard dog. He patrolled the trenches when they had rats in them and would catch the rats. He seems to have done everything but cook the meals.
I was going to say, he couldn't aim and shoot a rifle, though, could he?
I don't think so.
I found a flaw here with Sergeant Stubby. We're visiting with Anne Bossom. She's written a new book, Sergeant Stubby, How a Stray Dog and His Best Friend Helped Win World War I and Stole the Heart of a Nation. She'll be speaking about the story of Stubby the War Dog at 6:30 Friday evening at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. I just go to kclibrary.org for more information about that event, 6:30 Friday evening at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. And Anne, you've written a companion volume to Sergeant Stubby. It's for kids. Tell us about that book, too.
Sure. So Stubby the War Dog, the true story of World War I's bravest dog, is it's actually the perfect companion book, not just for kids but for grown-ups, because we were able to fill it with all these wonderful illustrations, and that was one of the things that was so rewarding in this research, was just the wealth of imagery and archival material that I was able to find and track down. And the soldier who was Stubby's best friend, Private Conroy or Corporal Conroy, had kept this incredible scrapbook, almost 100 pages of oversized material with clippings, and then just these souvenirs all the way down to little tiny doggy train tickets from when the two had done their furloughs and were traveling around France. And so the children's book not only has the narrative story, but written for younger readers, upper elementary school and into middle school, but then this visual just feast for anybody who's in falls in love with this story.
Yeah, how did you come across Private Conroy's private scrapbook?
Well, so Stubby, There was Stubby, after the war, came home a hero, and Conroy was, before we really even thought about public relations, was this quintessential PR guy for Stubby. And just had it in his head. He was so grateful, I think, for how Stubby had saved his life, kept him sane, and got helped to get him through the war, saved his life in the sense of being his companion, that he wanted to assure that Stubby's fame was recognized and essentially eternal. And so at the end of Stubby's life, he arranged to have the dog preserved by a taxidermist. And ultimately, the dog found his way to the Smithsonian and is one of the key exhibits in the World War I exhibit hall now about World War, about the U.S. military history. And when he gave the remains of the dog to the museum, he also gave them his scrapbook. And so it is there. It's and I made two different trips to the Smithsonian to work with the scrapbook. And
that must have been a thrill for you to see that.
Oh, it was. It's one of those just pinch me, don't I have the best job in the world kind of moments.
Well, I was going to say, you sort of just stumbled across this story. How did you come across it?
I totally found about Stubby by accident. I was doing photo research for a different project with my publisher, National Geographic, and looking up some caption information, actually, that was a political cartoon that referenced this American Bull Terrier breed, which I had never heard of. And I did a quick Google search to see what an American Bull Terrier was. And instead, I started finding references to this dog named Sergeant Stubby. And the stories were so preposterous that I thought, oh, look at this. I found some of those joke websites. I keep telling school kids they have to be careful when they find them. And then there was a link to the Smithsonian and an actual picture of the taxidermy remains of Stubby. And I had one of these just, wow, I can't let this go moments, and set the topic aside and kept peeking at it from time to time until ultimately I pitched the idea to National Geographic and you know, one book led to two, and I'm very lucky that I got to pursue this research trail.
I'm wondering, when you went back to, and you began to research Stubby, how much material was out there? How cold had the trail become as you began to go after the background of his life?
Well, it was about as cold as you could get, and it was complicated by the fact that most of the remaining evidence was in this scrapbook and consisted of a lot of newspaper clippings that didn't necessarily agree with one another. The stories varied and so forth. And my best break came near the end of the research when, thanks to a library connection and a contemporary newspaper article that I found out about through a librarian in Connecticut, I was able to track down the grandson of the Sergeant Corporal Conroy, who had been Stubby's best friend. And the Smithsonian had lost track of the descendants of this man. No one seemed to know where they were, but eventually I found not just a grandson, but another grandson and a granddaughter. And so being able to sit with them and listen to them reminisce about, they were adults when their grandfather was still alive, and so they grew up with Stubby stories. And that was extremely helpful, not just in understanding the dog more, but in understanding Corporal Conroy, because like a good PR man, he was always in the shadows, and there was almost nothing about him in the historical record, and the family helped me flesh out that story.
We're talking about Sergeant Stubby, the most famous dog in World War I. So Stubby developed, you know, all these different abilities. He became a veteran of 17 battles, and at one point he was wounded. What happened there, Anne?
Stubby caught some shrapnel at the end of a major battle in the spring of 1918 called the Battle of Seicheprey, And the battle had seemed to be winding down. He had gotten out of the trench to just go poke around, and then one last mortar shell or grenade or something came over, and he picked up quite a bit of shrapnel, including in his chest area, and it looked pretty serious. But Corporal Conroy carried him out of, you know, treated him as best as he could at the trenches when the word was given, which was soon after, that they could leave the battle scene. He brought the dog back towards the medics, and the field doctor that he encountered further dressed the animal's injuries and said he needs to go to the hospital, and added the dog to the ambulance that was taking wounded men to the nearby field hospital, and physicians there cleaned the wound, stitched them up, and the dog spent about 6 weeks recuperating at that field station.
Was he ever in any of the major battles of World War One? You know, I'm thinking about Verdun.
He was very much so. There were several battles that took place around Verdun, including major ones before the Americans got there. But he was there during the Meuse-Argonne campaign at the end of the war. And the Yankee division, with the exception of the first division, the Big Red One, saw more days in combat than any other division, and so they were shadowing the major assaults in France.
He was eventually given rank. How did that play out?
Well, this is a little controversial, and I would argue with Stubby has a lot of fans on the internet, and honestly, I think that they gave him the rank because in his lifetime, no one refers to him as Sergeant Stubby, and despite the fact that there is this mythology that the dog was given official rank, the connection was made that the rank came after he captured that soldier. I could find no confirmation of this fact.
Mm-hmm.
And so because none of the newspaper articles, and there literally are hundreds of newspaper articles written during Stubby's lifetime, he was front page news in the New York Times and the Washington Post. None of them refer to him as Sergeant Stubby. He's always Stubby. And so I honestly think that's an embellishment that that has been added posthumously. And maybe the military needs to make it official. I think it would be well deserved, but I don't think that that's officially been done yet.
But he did shake hands with President Woodrow Wilson.
He did, and the two presidents that followed. He met every president in his lifetime.
How well known was he when the war ended, Anne?
Probably not too well known in the United States. Definitely, he was known in France. There are anecdotes about him being seen as quite he was a recognizable figure when he was touring around France after the war. And when he came home, he became more and more famous here, in part because of his abilities to march in parades. He was a very capable parader, and he didn't literally lift his feet like a marcher, but he could walk in formation, follow commands when it came time to turn eyes right at the reviewing stand. He knew what that meant. and then he very quickly, you know, one thing led to another. He did a little vaudeville, people wanted a happy story for a war that had ended with a lot of wounded men, mm-hmm. a lot of disturbed men, a lot of dead soldiers. And so I think Stubby was one of those pieces that allowed the public to have a connection to World War One that wasn't so grim.
How long did he live, Anne?
He lived until 1926. So about 11 years old, we're guessing, and died in Conroy's arms.
Mm. The book again, Sergeant Stubby, How a Stray Dog and His Best Friend Helped Win World War One and Stole the Heart of a Nation. Again, Anne Boston will be telling the story of Stubby the War Dog at 6:30 this Friday evening at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. Anne, what a pleasure to have you. Great story. Thanks so much for sharing it with us.
Steve, it's been wonderful. Appreciate the time.